to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Low North Bay Station Yanks. I'm Tim Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 30. After a huge turnaround yesterday when we started the show, for sure. We were down 16 in the S&P, and they made it up 60 at one point and closed up like 42. Those are the futures. So we had some definite movement to the upside yesterday. We've had some down days, and the funny part of it is we're exactly where we were last Friday night, Manny. Just about. We're in a buck.
Isn't that crazy after wild volatility for a week?
Yeah. It's, I don't know, crazy stuff, eh? But the, Kevin, how are you?
I'm okay. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. I learned some stuff yesterday. It's always a learning experience if you're willing to open your eyes, you know, and you do stuff, you know, just we always have people on the show talking about the underground economy, right? So, mm-hmm. I'm thinking because of the, well, I'm gonna blame the fact that my old jalopy, my Suburban, last year we were pounding it down the alley and hitting bumps and potholes and everything else. Well, anyway, it turns out that there's a leak in the bottom, so I find out that it's a transfer case, but it's a crack in the transfer case. Now, you're talking about a 20-year-old heavy-duty four-wheel drive transfer case, so there's not many of these around, right? So I decide I'm going to, the guy who's going to put it in for me, he has trouble finding one. So I go online, and of course there's these national part locators now. I don't know if you've ever had to do this, but I mean, if you have a salvage yard, you not only have the stuff at your place, but you put it on, this national thing if you want to, okay? So, but it's so bizarre. So I put my name in there, and I say, okay, here's my email. When instantly I get like 15 people with these things, right? So they're all over me. And every one of them, I'm just saying, every one of them is from, you can barely understand, right? So every one of these guys is Indian or whatever, which is fine. I mean, obviously they're hustling. And, so they're all calling, they all got to send me stuff, they're sending me pictures, you know, mileage on the thing. I get the idea, Kevin, they're all selling the same one. There's like one or two.
Oh, that could be.
And they're anywhere from 500,
or they're all one person with different personas.
Well, I get this one that they sent me this website, and it's a pretty professional looking website. You know, they got the VIN, the price, and all the stuff in there. And at the bottom, it says there's a little window that keeps flashing. It'll be Kevin just bought a transmission from South Bend. It's flashing on the site. And then it says, what does it say? It's, proven out by integrity.com or some site that's going to prove that you're really Kevin and you really bought a transmission. I'm like, who are these guys?
Yeah, who is integrity.com?
I'm like, all this world has been out there that I didn't even know about, Kevin.
another in the Irwin Mainway family of websites.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, then it'll be Joan from South Carolina just bought a steering box, and I'm going, who the hell cares? But Kevin, there's a million worlds within a world, you know. It's like,
and that's just an attempt to create the aura of success of transaction volume that would indicate that you too should be buying from us.
Yeah, it's crazy. Hey, did you have a chance, not to dive into somewhat of a pet peeve here right away from mine, but I think, I mean, I don't know if the listeners agree with me or not. Maybe they can tweet it and let me know when we're there. I get the feeling, you know, it's, when people do stuff in a lot of ways, Kevin, it not only, whether it makes sense, doesn't make sense, but if it goes on for a long period of time, to me, it affects people's, their total thought process about everything. And this easy money we have right now, I think is starting to, I mean, it's probably not starting, it's probably well into, it's affecting everybody, because if you're in that game where you're part of this government largesse of the cash, I think you think this is the way it's always going to be and the way it's always been, or something. I don't want to go through all these things, although it's
at least been normalized.
Yeah, it's been normal. And I was driving around yesterday, so I keep hearing about is the House passing by one vote, by the way, this Capital Security Act, right? I don't know if you've read anything about this stuff. And they've got issues from January 6th, and they want to spend a few bucks to harden the place up. I'm thinking, I don't know.
Make sure it never, ever happens again.
Well, that obviously, yeah, but...
That is the proper wording, Tom.
Yes. So, then all of a sudden they throw the number out there, $1.9 billion. I'm going, $1.9 billion? I mean, what are we talking about? That's like a real lot of dough. You know, that's the median wage for 47,000 people in this country. I mean, I think these guys have absolutely, well, Nancy Pelosi has totally lost track. They think the printing press really is theirs. And I really think that in the annals of history, God, I hope I'm wrong on this. The annals of history, this guy Powell is going to go down as one of the most buffoonish people in power we've ever had. He has let these people know that whatever they want, he prints.
Which is a pretty high hurdle to clear.
Yes, it is. But the message, I don't know. You know what? I think he's probably, you know, Kevin, if we went out with the guy, we'd probably
and yet he'll clear it.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure we'd really like him. We'd find him intelligent. I mean, it's not like he's a bad, but he mustn't know that he's given these buffoons in power the idea that whatever they want, he'll print. And there's a reason, you know, that the Constitution doesn't say whatever the president wants to spend or Congress wants to spend, they just print and go. I mean, it doesn't say that. I mean, it didn't say that in Rome, for God's sake. He didn't give Julius Caesar that power. I mean, I'm looking at this stuff. Talk about a giveaway. National Guard, $520 million for pay and operations costs for the Guard's deployment at the Capitol and throughout Washington, D.C. from January 6th to May 20th. $520 million. How many guys do they have? I mean, what is that? What did they have? Did they have 1,000 people? That's a 500,000 a guy? I mean, what are we doing here? The Capitol Police, $43 million for responding to the riot, including $31 million for overtime. Overtime, $31 million. I mean, how many people are we talking about? The architect of the Capitol, $40 million to pay for costs directly related. Prosecution support, $39 million to process hundreds of prosecutions related to the siege. Haven't we already done that? Including $34 million for U.S. attorneys. $3.9 million for the Justice Department's Criminal Division and $1.7 million for the Department's National Security, whoever the hell they are. But this is even better. Library of Congress, $13 million for upgrading the electronic securities. $13 million? God's sake, Kevin. What kind of electronic security system do you have where $13 million is an upgrade? FBI.
That's a lot of Simply Safe systems, huh?
Yeah, National Park Service, $1.4. But then it gets even better. You start to have $200 million to create a dedicated new ground force similar to a wing of the Air National Guard to respond to emergencies for the Capitol Police. You're going to have people just sitting around waiting for the next riot?
Yep.
But here's a good one. $21 million to the House Sergeant-at-Arms to ramp up protection details for members, including coordinated travel and upgrades and security for their district offices. So we're going to give the House members a bunch of dough. So what does that come down to? There's 400 guys. What is that? $500,000 a guy? No. $50,000 a guy. We're going to give the upgrade their like office at home? I mean, what?
It really is preposterous, isn't it?
But they must know that they're not going to tax people for this tomorrow. They've obviously lost track that the median number in this country is still, I'll give it a boost and say 40 grand. It's probably more like 38,000. Do they do the division and all say, wait a minute, the entire pay of 47,000 people is in this bill? I mean, what? I mean, I don't. It's so off the chart, Kevin. I can't even. I don't even what to say about it. Just say. I mean, I don't. What do you think all these other bills are like?
Go ahead, vote against it. Then you're against security.
You're against capital security.
You want people to die.
I never thought in any kind of course Biden's not going to do it, but I never thought at any sort of a constitutional level that I agreed with the line item veto, but now I'm all for it. I'm all for it because I don't know which one of these lines I'd leave in. To be honest with you. I guess I'd pay the
veto would leave you with, you know, ten bucks for some phone cards for people to call on 911.
You know, it says here, where the minority whip Steve Scalise, everyone knows who he is, dubbed it as Nancy Pelosi's partisan plan to militarize the Capitol. Some of these guys are a little clever, I'll say that for them. But I mean, the thing of it is, it's not this particular bill. It's the mindset. They don't even care. You know, billions here, billions there. We'll just print them. We don't care. And by the way, we'll find a way to tax people afterward. I mean, I don't. You could take all the money from the top 500 richest people in the country, and these guys would spend it in a week. I mean, it has nothing to do. I'm probably way more towards making the people who don't pay taxes. I'm not going to say rich people. I'm just going to say anyone who doesn't pay their fair share. Which usually gets to be rich people because they can afford the best accountants and they don't pay in the biggest companies. So, I mean, because what are we down to? The corporations pay 1% of the GDP in taxes. I mean, it's laughable. Yet, you know, those people are never going to really pay, right? They're going to find another way around it. I mean,
unless you want just a, you know, to go. Like with a flat tax or an extraordinarily simplified tax code that doesn't have many deductions, then yeah, the same people who aren't paying now, who aren't paying quote the, you know, what the politicians like to say pay their fair share, are still not going to pay their quote fair share.
And it's the not point where the people who actually have income that the people who get bleeped the worst. Are the people just under some sort of number? It's like one of the guys that Maddie and I know from the building, say nameless. He's right over the $50,000 number, which means a couple years ago when I went through all this, which means no help in the Obamacare, right? It means you're absolutely screwed everywhere. But now if you're 45, some of this stuff trickles to you. If you're 55, it doesn't. So there's always. But I'm going to say a family, husband and wife with a good job and a bonus, say they pull in 300 and one on a good year, all right, and you're sending kids to school because you're not getting any help there because you're making dough. You're paying taxes on houses. You're paying tax on the 300. The idea that somehow they're going to get like 150 or 200 grand out of you, they're already getting it out of you. I mean, you don't have one. I don't see that person having any. Any wiggle room whatsoever to you, especially in so many states that pay a lot. And if you're, I don't know what the number has to be. I think if you own your own business and the business is profitable, you can weasel your way around in there a little bit. But other than that, I mean, you really got to be bigger to move. And those guys, that guy's not going to move his. That guy and his wife are not moving stuff offshore. I don't think, are they? I doubt it.
Where your wiggle room gets to be is really in the tax accounting for businesses. So, you know, yeah, if you own your own business, you have an S-Corp, you have, or your proprietorship or something like that, and you can start playing around with depreciation schedules, for example. And, you know, everybody thinks of depreciation as straight line, but tax is a whole different thing. You just have to have an accountant who's going to tell you that right now the tax code is rewarding purchase of trucks. Therefore, you're going to buy your personal vehicle for your company, or your company is going to buy your personal vehicle, and it's going to be something that falls in the category of truck. And that, you know, that's where a small business owner might be able to work the tax code, but that's sort of trimming around the edges of what the overall picture is. It really anybody who can, you know, report a taxable income of zero with a real positive cash flow. It's that's where you're getting the fair share issues.
Well, and the idea we heard this morning, or I don't know if this is going to come through as a law, but the White House wants it, is anybody now who takes a and I think your population, everybody knows that I'm I think the idea that people are buying whatever, they can do whatever they want, and a lot of people have made a lot of money buying his Bitcoin and these other things, but the simple fact is I don't know if you were listening to the show yesterday, Kevin, or the guy, I'll say the bump was on CNBC when it went way down. He said, fundamentally, it's a terrific buy here. I'm going, what do you mean fundamentally? there's no income. There's no building. There's no assets. Where exactly are, what is the new definition of fundamentals?
What are Bitcoin fundamentals? Yeah,
what are fundamentals? Do they have income? No. Do they have any assets? No. Well, okay. But it's a buy. Whatever. But now they're talking about how they want to make sure people pay taxes on Bitcoin. Right, if people do transactions in Bitcoin. So what do you suppose the first thing they're doing is? I mean, this is unconscionable to me, but nobody's asking. First thing they're doing.
Well, they're the same thing. They're actually going to reach into all of your bank accounts now, and that's the proposal. They're going to just take your information, that's all.
Well, they're going to say that if, which we would never do this because we're not allowed to, but and we wouldn't anyway, but if we were to take... You know, I think it's getting, actually, I should take that back. I think it's getting real close for some firms. I'll bet those Robinhood guys find a way to do it. They'll actually take Bitcoin into your account. I think. I'm not positive on that. I know you can trade the futures, but I think somebody somewhere said that they were going to take Bitcoin into their account. Well, now, of course, the federal government, they're not going to do any work. They're going to demand that anybody who accepts a transaction in Bitcoin file out a report just like it's cash. So in other words,
right, but the latest proposal from yesterday too doesn't even have a threshold on it or a type. They just want all your transactions.
They want it not just out of the
cryptocurrency platforms or anybody who is tapped into the cryptocurrency platforms. They want it out of the national banking system, too.
Well,
they want the IRS to have access to all of that.
But two sort of separate subjects, fine line here. One is they want access to all the transactions, but the reporting requirements is if you want to buy a car and you give the guy half a Bitcoin or what would it be, say you buy a $10,000 car, you give them a fifth of a Bitcoin, you need to treat that as if it's $10,000 in cash. So it's not saying what you're saying is wrong. It's saying the reporting requirements are immediately being dumped on other people. So in other words, you know, Kevin's used car lot, you can't take cash from somebody. Right? If it's over $10,000, you're supposed to report it. Now, a bank, on the other hand, every single transaction you do, if people think for a second, plus Denny Hastert, you know, I'm not a big fan, but in fact, I'm no fan, but the idea that if the reporting requirement is $10,000 for a bank, and, you know, people think, you know, some of this stuff is nuts, but it isn't. If you actually went in your bank and every week for the next 10, you withdrew $8,000 in cash or brought in $8,000 in cash, even though I don't think there's a law. Where's my attorney buddies? Where's Lou? Where's Brennan? Where's Flanagan? We need him. I don't think that's an infraction. I don't think there's a. But now you are deemed to.
There is some aggregation in the regulations.
Well, you are now deemed to be getting around the law. And the reason why you're pulling out eight a week is not because you need it to pay for something, or you're building houses or whatever. It's not that you're paying cash for anything, and you're giving people 1099s or anything, right? It's you're getting around the law because you know the law is 10 and you're doing 8. And if you do that 3 weeks in a row, now that's 24, and you're dodging the reporting requirements.
Yeah, there's an assumption that there's an assumption of guilt in the behavior.
Boy, weren't we something?
But where does it cut off? What if you do 7? What if you do three?
I think it never cuts off.
So if you did $200 a week every single week for 10 years, do you get flagged?
I probably won't bother that. Probably
what about 600?
When I say they have to aggregate it, and I don't remember the dollar amounts, and it may be when you push over $10,000 in cash transactions within an accounting period, within a month. I don't remember exactly what the number is, but it really is just counting, you know, all of your cash flow, and if you bring in an X amount of cash, you either have to be on file as a cash business. So if you run, you know, a restaurant or a marijuana dispensary or something like that, might not have access to the credit card systems, then that's fine. You're on file with an exemption, but it's all done electronically. It used to be they had, the tellers always had to fill out paper reports, and so that was where you got your $10,000 and over, because someone was filing a paper report. But now, once it was easily aggregated, then that took care of it. And you know what brought this along? You know where this is born out of? What issue? Anybody got a guess?
I'm going to guess that they blamed it on drugs, but I bet it wasn't.
Yeah, it was the it was Reagan era, and it was the legislation to stop the drug flow, aimed specifically at money laundering.
Do you know? I hope
so. This is all part of the war on drugs that we continue to fight fruitlessly.
Yeah.
Except that now we use it for everything else but the war on drugs, whatever that may be.
Maddie, in your travels with your buddy Venkman, I don't know if the poor little guy's still alive. I hope he is. You ever run into Puck?
I don't know the other dog's names, so it's possible.
What's the matter? You're supposed to know the dog's names, not the people.
Venkman probably knows his name.
Yeah, Venkman knows whatever his real dog name is between the dogs.
Well, the lady who talk about not making a judgment of somebody, and which you should never do, because you're always wrong. Well, Puck and Scruff were best friends. So Scruff's been gone, 10 years. So Puck has got up there, if he's still with us. And the lady who owns Puck, or Puck owns her. I don't know which. Who owns who? You own Venkman or he owns you?
Yeah, Peabody and Sherman type arrangement.
So anyway, but she's this kind of regular looking lady. She's up there a little bit, and you would never guess she's like a world class rower on the river and all kinds of stuff, and she works in bank security. So one day we get talking about it, and then me being the dummy, I go, so like you're one of the people to make sure that if you do, you take out $10,000 more in cash, they report it. She looks at me, she goes, you're way smarter than that. Every time you take cash out, it's being reported somewhere at some level. So don't think for a second that the $9,900 in your home free. So that's my research on the subject, because that's what she did for banks.
Yeah.
And so as for when the cutoff is, I don't know.
Well, I think Kevin's probably right. I assume it's just a total dollar amount within a short period of time.
I think it unfortunately has to do with who you are and if they're watching you.
Well, that could be too.
Because they want all
Well, there's that. First of all, every transaction and the content of every deposit you make, for example, is that, that's all recorded. We all understand that. So it's and in the image world, not only do they can they tell you, how many checks were in your deposit and how much cash was in your deposit, but the specific images are a query away. Just enter one account number into the system, and you have a picture of every check that came in. You have a picture of the cash ticket. You have the teller's log where they, when they count it out, they know how many 20s you had and how many, how many hundreds you had and how many singles you had. And set it. That's all standard big data stuff now. That's all available. So, it's all logged. And the question is, does it automatically get reported to the feds, or does it require a subpoena?
Well, the Elliott Spitzer.
That's your big issue. It isn't a matter of who you are. Everybody's is captured, but is it subject to subpoena or not? And it really needs to be. Damn near anything you do should be subject to subpoena.
Well, remember the Elliott Spitzer story, where he was taking some cash out, and so they decided he must have been getting this is the rationale. He must have been getting blackmailed for something, so they put a phone tap on him. And that's when they found out about the hookers, by the phone tap from the cash withdrawals. So, of course,
that makes no sense to me, of course, because that's not necessarily suspicious activity. In other words, you need to name the crime you're after.
When you don't like someone,
it sounds like a subpoena that shouldn't have been granted. Well, we are worried about X, therefore.
I had one
that's
of the most
something a judge should never allow.
I had one of the most interesting discussions when the Athletic Club, Buckingham, had his nice little bar in there, so we used to go stop there after a workout and erase the effects of the workout, right? But there was Bob.
Immediately.
Yeah,
you do realize stopping at the bar is kind of counterproductive after the workout.
Well, it's but if you didn't work out, then it would be worse.
Right, so it's just an even transaction.
Yeah, it's an even trade. So
yeah, okay. So you earned your stop at the saloon.
Absolutely. And so that's where, and that's where I meet, my creatures, my attorneys and people in the business and get some business. Anyway, so there's five or six, traders. I mean, we were talking about serious old-time traders that have opinions on everything, and yet they never look in the mirror ever for themselves, right? So doesn't make them bad. They're all good friends of mine, and I trust any of them.
What's the quote from Bull Durham when Annie Savoy is, thinking about Nukalusion, the majors, and said the world is made for people who aren't burdened with self-awareness?
So these guys, because Elliott Spitzer came after people in the business. I mean, he could have been one of the brightest people around, and he might have been our generation's Roosevelt, but they torpedoed him because he was a traitor to his class, whatever. Anyway, so he gets this thing happening, and everybody's like happy the guy gets indicted, right, for the hookers. So me, of course, having to be the alternative. You want to do this after break, Manny?
Sure.
SP Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 47. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatory laboratories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, Northlake Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollies. Mr. Matt Webber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. SP Futures up 16, continuing yesterday's rally. NASDAQ Futures up 49. So we are up, by the way, last Friday, I think the Spiders closed at 416 and change. We are 416 and change after all this carnage and crazy stuff all week. But it's been one of those weeks. Cisco yesterday was traded like under 49 and now it's 52.5. So that was a nice, that was a decent buy the dipper. You don't always get those after earnings, but that was one of them. Dow futures up 121. This is a review of yesterday. Dow was up 188. S&P up 43 after being down 16 when we came in the morning. NASDAQ up 236. That's 1.8%. Over in Europe, we got actually a mixed bag here. I was expecting kind of big rallies, but I don't see them. DAX up 33.2%. FTSE down 7.1%. CAC around up 30.5%. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei, which has been very volatile lately, up 219, up, that's 0.8%. Shanghai down 20, that's 0.6%. Hang Seng up 8, that's flat. So Hang Seng is snoozing through all this, at least today. Bonds, 1.62 unchanged, 1 minus 0.12. It made it back to minus 0.09. It looked like it was heading for zero, and then it's backed off just a little bit. Japan's, where it's been like forever, positive 0.09. Oil, up 86 cents, that's 1.4%, 62.80. We're kind of in this range now between maybe 62 and 65, at least until I say that, and then it'll break out. Brent up 7.76, that's 1.1%, 65.87. Natural gas up a penny, 2.93. RBOB up 2 cents at 2.06. We've got gold down 2.40 at 18.79. Looking like it wants to go to 1900, but it just hasn't gone there yet. Silver down 17 cents, very volatile, but kind of between this 27 to 28 range, so it's 27.89 this morning. Copper down a penny at 454. And our crypto, we've got the Bitcoin up 495, 40,675 after hitting 30,000. Was it Wednesday morning, man, or Wednesday afternoon? So that thing has bounced back. Well, it was down 25% and up 33%. Really crazy stuff. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had a pretty serious crash earlier this morning just across the Indiana border on 8094 on the westbound side at Indianapolis Boulevard. That crash has crews on the scene as cleanup's been underway for a while now, but the two lanes are still blocked, and it's causing significant congestion on the westbound 8094 and bleeding over the Illinois border. Even though the crash was on the Indiana side. So avoid 8094 if at all possible this morning because it is very backed up in both directions, but especially on the westbound side right around the border and just past the Indiana border. Back on the Illinois side, if you're coming in on the Bishop Ford, there's a bit of a slowdown as there's some road work that's blocking the exit ramp on Sibley there on the Bishop Ford. But no issues on the Ryan or I-57. We're pretty quiet on the Stevenson. A little bit of red near Cicero, but nothing past that. Eisenhower looking good. Edens and Kennedy are all quiet. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, one crash in the area. It's out west. North Avenue at Fair Oaks Road out in the western suburbs near Wheaton. There is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another warm summer-like day. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 83. Right now it's crystal clear and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today. Mild temps, a high of 85. Right now it's overcast, still dry with rain in the area, and 78. In sports, the Cubs took 3 of 4 from the Nationals, winning the finale of the four-game set 5-2 yesterday afternoon. Ian Happ with a couple of home runs in that one. Jason Hayward was placed on the injured list before the game with a hamstring strain, so he'll be out for at least 10 days. Sox were off, but they're in first place, and they head to the Bronx to take on the Yankees this weekend. Game one of that series is 6:05 Chicago time, first pitch from Yankee Stadium. Yankees are playing good ball of late as well, so that should be a good series. Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 3-2. And the PGA Championship got underway yesterday, Chief. Round one completing with Corey Connors, the Canadian, in first place after round one. He's 5 under.
Now, why did we let him in?
With a 2-shot lead. Some notables behind him: Brooks Koepka, Keegan Bradley, 2 shots back. Phil Mickelson, 3 shots back.
I asked my question again. Why did we let him in? They won't let anybody in up there.
Good question.
Speaking of which, I actually stopped in the Tripoli last night. Ran into some people.
I've been there a lot lately. They're doing well.
Yeah, they've raised their price a little bit, but nothing like anybody else.
And I didn't even notice that they did. It must have been on just certain things.
Yeah, evidently, there's a big shortage of chicken wings, believe it or not. So people have used that. One of the guys told me he went to Kincaid's and 10 chicken wings was like $20 or something.
Jesus.
Yeah.
They usually have like wing specials 2 nights a week.
Yeah, well, he must not have been a special night. But I was watching Toronto play the, you know, obviously it's a Boston bar, so they had the Bo Sox on. I don't know why. This is a week where I've made assumptions. Every time I made an assumption, I've been wrong. I just assumed that down in Tampa Bay, the Toronto Blue Jays were playing in the big stadium. That game last night, they're in like some AAA park. That is absolutely not a major league stadium where they were playing. At least last night, they're playing.
What city are they in?
I think they're in Tampa, but I'm not sure. I
mean, are they in Tampa? Or are they Orlando?
The football or the basketball team was in Tampa, so I guess I assumed. And whenever you assume, you make an ass out of you. I mean, I thought it was some sort of the same deal, but maybe it isn't. I don't know. But I'm sitting there going.
So what I'm reading here, and I'll get more detail shortly, but the Blue Jays are playing April and May in Florida in their extended spring training. And I'll find out exactly where that stadium is.
So they're playing at their spring training place.
And then June 1st, so coming up in 10 days, they move to Buffalo, and they'll play in Buffalo for the rest of the season.
That's right. Yeah, I thought they played at Buffalo last year.
I think they did, yeah. So obviously during the cold weather months, they decided to stay down in Florida, and then June 1st, they're moving to Buffalo.
It looked like
good decision.
It looks like they had temporary lights last night, which is, you know, even more bizarre for a major league thing because they're interesting.
Well, it may be that their spring training ballpark is not especially well lit. You know, it's more or less lit for practice rather than games. Because remember, spring training games are typically in the afternoon.
True.
So they may have brought in the temporary lights to make it to provide adequate lighting for the for a major league game.
Well, I'll get back to my story here. I'll make it brief. So these guys,
I will not.
Well, they're playing in TD Ballpark in Dundon. Is that it? I've never heard of that. Place.
Dunedin.
Dunedin. Where the hell's that?
No idea.
I don't know. I forget.
No, it's not a.
Hold on. Google Maps is our friend here. No, it's not. Let me rephrase that. Any kind of map system is online.
Well, is map?
It's on the Gulf Coast. I have found that.
Is MapQuest still alive, or are they totally dead? Did Google put them out of business?
I think they still exist, but
MapQuest's still alive.
All right. I don't know why I haven't used them in so damn long.
So Dunedin is north of Clearwater.
For apps in the car, Waze has gotten in. Oh yeah, it's Dunedin is on the Gulf Coast. Let's see, what's the closest big city?
It's near Tampa.
It's a little north of Clearwater, which is, you know, sort of in the Tampa area.
Yep. Yep. So I think there's a lot of spring training complexes in that area.
But you gotta drive around too much in Florida. It's nice going to Arizona because, I mean, every park is what the furthest you as far as 20 minutes away by express.
Well, in Phoenix, everything is 20 minutes away.
Yeah, but I mean, Florida,
no matter where you're going, if you're going,
that's changing. Phoenix is growing like crazy.
True, it is, but it seemed like, you know, I go down there a lot for work, or I did before COVID. It seemed like whether you were going 5 blocks, 5 miles, or 25 miles, it was like, yeah, it's like 20 minutes away.
Well, if you don't,
it's like, all right.
If you don't get in the 101 around and just go stoplights, I used to get on there before the 101 was built, and when you gave the traffic report, it was how many stoplights it would take you to get through the big intersection. It'd be like Scottsdale Road and Shea. It's like five lights, so you knew how long it was going to take you, because everybody was on Scottsdale. I mean, the only road was Scottsdale Boulevard.
Yeah.
And anyway, real quick on my cash story, the guys from, you know, my trader buddies, they're cheering that Spitzer's, you know, arrested. And I said, look, do you realize how this happened? Well, what do you mean? I said, well, you guys now, well, come on, we've got a couple of drinks. You guys are big swinging bleeps, right? Whoa, yeah. I said, so, you know, if the wife wants to, you know, get a painter and it's 10 grand on the house, you're going to go to the bank and you're going to get 10 grand, you're going to pay the painter cash. Well, yeah. I said, well, if you want to buy an old car that's 15 grand, you're going to pay cash. Well, yeah. I said, plus, if you go to Vegas, I can't imagine any of you guys going with less than 10 G in your pocket. Well, no. I said, okay, so you do that in 1 month, I got a phone tap on you. Why would you do that? Because they just did for Spitzer. Why'd they do that? Why do you think he had the phone tap out of you, idiots? I mean, people always think that it can't happen to them. You know, and every time, I mean, I honestly don't think, I mean, if you're a guy that's going to decide you're going to pay your people in cash and deduct it, okay, and you're refusing to give them 1099s, so they have to pay, you know, income tax, I guess that's a problem if you're a government. But if I decide to pay some guy to shovel my walk or whatever for 2 weeks in a row like this last winter, and I don't deduct it, I don't see why I should have to tell somebody that he needs to pay it. It's a zero-sum game. You're not stealing from anybody. I'm not deducting it, am I? I mean, if Stocks and Jocks was doing it and you were deducting it, well, then, yeah, you want the guy to pay taxes because you're deducting it from your income. But, I mean, this whole idea that these guys have to know everything, and it really bothers the hell out of me that younger people don't get it, that if you're so used to telling everybody in the world, not just, they don't care, I don't want to tell the government. They don't care if they tell the government and everybody else. But I surely as hell don't want to sell something, the credit card processor and everybody else, every place I go. You know, just because they want to know about a Dunkin' Donuts coffee, I'm not going to tell them if I don't have to. But it's going to come a day where I'm probably going to have to, because there's not going to be any cash. And people are going to wonder what happened to them.
But it is nice when you get the free Dunkin' coffee after every 10 purchases because you use the app.
Well, if you get the card,
which I do like,
they'll punch the card, too, if you want to.
Do they have a card they'll punch? Oh, really?
I mean, not.
I think all their promotions are on the app because they're trying to get people to use the app.
Probably. No, no, why is it? No,
well, yeah, they want to get people to use the app, and they want to know about you as the customer and how you behave, so they know how to market to you. And I don't think that's inherently bad. It's what happens to the data that becomes the question. Is your consumer behavior sufficiently protected information? And you know, is that the kind of thing that when the government is saying they want the IRS to have access to all your transactions, that they have to provide, that they're actually looking at your coffee purchases, whether anybody's paying any attention to it or not, whether they're accumulating all of that information about you? Because I can sure take your shopping history and put together a pretty good picture of what your life is, what you do on a day in day out basis.
Right.
I mean, it's like COVID here in Michigan. You know, they're supposed to get a phone number from everybody. They're supposed to get your contact information at a restaurant if you eat in there, so that they can contact trace. I'm sorry, I'm not eating in Michigan because it is not the government's business to be gathering the data about where I have dinner on any given night.
Of course, you can't take umbrage with that and then hand them a credit card.
Well, I understand that, and it's the same thing. That, you know, the credit card information is all logged, but as I said earlier, the question is, does it require a subpoena for anybody to get it, or is it just something that they get to have? And according to the proposal yesterday, it's something that, you know, it's something that our current administration thinks they're entitled to get without a subpoena.
Well, they just think that it's all them. Yeah, it's absolutely all them. But God help if it ever happened to them. Right? They wouldn't want it. Hey,
I don't want them fishing through behavioral patterns. You know, the Spitzer model. What they're supposed to do is they have a reason, they have a probable cause, and a name on the warrant as to who and why.
Well, my
they don't get to say I want restaurant X's information or I want AT&T's information. There is no such person as Mr. AT&T.
Yeah, I don't understand. Well, two things. I understand a lot of stuff, but it'd be different if all this stuff was I'm going to use the term working. I mean, the idea of having downtown cameras with all this facial rec, all this. I mean, we just heard a story about one of our, I won't say who, one of our guests on the show was essentially mugged at one of the McDonald's here a couple of months ago. Okay, I'm going to say that there's nothing but cameras. Nobody ever showed up. Nobody arrested the guy. I mean, what are we doing? I'm going to say we have on the expressways, because Rahm couldn't wait to give cameras all over the place. He must have been getting money in his back pocket by the second from these people. We have cameras all over the expressway. Maddie, are there more shootings where nobody gets arrested than ever before?
I mean, sure seems that way.
I mean, by the way, they arrested a guy. Have you read this story, man? I don't think you were in that day. They actually arrested a guy after a expressway shooting. You know how they did it?
No.
The guy's blasting away at people. Somebody behind him, I think he was a Metra cop. And when the shooter got off, he just laid back and he followed the guy. And he called 911 and says, I'm following the guy. And they came and arrested him at the guy's house when he stopped. So the cameras didn't help. Nothing helped. All this money we spent.
The good old-fashioned, I followed the guy.
A Metro cop said, I'm following this guy. And by the way, he just shut up this car, and here's the plate, and I'm following
him. Well, at least there was a cop on the expressway. You don't see that very often.
Well, yeah, but he had nothing to do with... He was a Metro cop.
Still a cop.
Well, yeah, but
he was just getting from here to there.
Yeah, he was just going home.
He wasn't patrolling.
But he wasn't. But I'm saying, it's not like it's even working. I mean, if you could say the amount of expressway shootings were... You know, 500 over this 3-year period, we put in these cameras, and now it's 5. Even I would have a hard time arguing against it. But they're not. What are they using them for? I mean, they're not working. Are they? Or if they are, how the hell are they working? I mean, they put the cameras in, and the policemen don't go on the expressway. So, is that trade worth it? I don't think so. I don't. Like Seven says, it's hard to imagine. What the goal is here, it's like one of the great lines from William Kennedy's book regarding the atomic bomb. Events were in the saddle and they drove the men hard. I mean, who's leading who here? Is the technology, the fact that, hey, you can have these great cameras? And I mean, this idea of these neighborhoods now where they detect the sound of gunfire going off, has that been a big success? Who defines success? It seems to me.
Well, so now you go back to, you know, how would a normal person think about it? Would you go spend billions on that, or would you say, let me test it out in a limited space, and then let's see if it's effective? Because if it's effective, yeah, we can go ahead and spend more. But on the other hand, if it's to no effect, then we will have saved ourselves billions of dollars spent on things that wouldn't do anything. No, we can't think that way.
No.
Nope, we just put our head down and go.
And now we got the $1.9 trillion of the capital security bill. Now, where do you suppose at the bottom of that bill are 4 or 5 or 10 different tags, or whatever you want to call them, that over 5 years from now we can say that this was a good idea or not? It's a good idea because you're jamming money at people you want to jam money to. You're giving it to every representative... You know, $500,000 to spend on his local office or police. He's happy. Without any regard to what they're spending it on, you know, and whether it actually is going to help anybody. I mean, there's this constant giveaway. I don't see how it's, I mean, it's probably always been like this to a certain degree, but when I see people, you know, struggling to, haven't gotten a raise in 5 years, and these guys are spending this money like the term drunken sailors. I mean, there's a total disconnect between these people's view of the world and the view of the world that I see, Kevin. I just
And there's always been waste, and there's always been things that annoy you about government. I mean, some of the greatest quotes about government go back to Will Rogers, or even farther than that. So, you know, it's not like any of this is brand new. The scale is new, but the other part of the issue is that, you know, why do you get away with it? Why do you get away with it so much with so little criticism? And the answer is because we spend all our time on the wedge issues. We create, you know, my team and your team, and if you dare to criticize my team, you can't be on it because you're anti-orthodoxy, and you know, therefore we're more concerned about let me put it this way. It would be like, just because I'm a Sox fan, I defend Tony La Russa's meat-headed point of view about the unwritten rules.
That guy keeps digging
just
himself.
Just because I like the White Sox, and you can't, you're not allowed to object otherwise, and that's where we are in terms of, you know, how we get people to think politically now. So of course you can get away with anything you want.
There can't be a soul on earth that thinks Tony's antics this week are anything resembling coherent. And I'm sure we're going to get nothing but tweets on that, but I can't figure out what he's talking about.
I think that's pretty true of the La Russa case, but what's interesting, though, is that you would find it, say, in college sports. You know, the team loyalties are so strong that, I'm sorry, you know, think about Florida State. It was St. Bobby Bowden.
Yeah.
If you dare criticize, you know, people from the outside could criticize the way the program ran. But damn, you don't criticize St. Bobby. You don't criticize Mike Krzyzewski if you're a Duke fan. I'm sorry, you can't do that.
Or DeBear, or Daryl Royal, or Bob Devaney.
Yeah, or any of them. Yeah. Once you get that iconic status, man, you're above all criticism of any kind.
Well, you won. If you win, you're okay.
How long did Bobby Knight have the, you know, being the, you know, despite being the biggest bore on the face of the earth, have the support of Indiana basketball fans everywhere, and the complete love of Indiana basketball fans, and he could do no wrong.
Some of my first clients were from, because we always did seminars down there, from Scottsdale, the one guy I talk about once in a while that owned the islands up in the Bay of the Islands and Lake Huron and stuff. They would, this is before, I don't know how one guy got the game. Somebody somewhere, this, I don't know, it might have been before cable. This is like 1992, so I guess maybe there was cable, but somehow or another, these guys had a choreography. Some guy was able to get the Indiana basketball game, whatever night it was, on a Tuesday night, and then he would put it in his mailbox by like 10 o'clock or whatever the hell it was. And some guy would pick it up at 10:15, and he would put it in his mailbox like by midnight. Somebody would pick it up there. They had six guys that would rotate from people's mailbox, and this VCR, for like, which is what it was, would make it to, by noon, all six guys had watched the game from the night before. That's how crazy they were for Indiana basketball and Bobby
Knight. That's how crazy, yeah. Same way in Kentucky.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, there just are some states that are basketball nuts.
But Kevin, it's reached the point where, you know, I guess it was sort of all like that. I read and I heard stuff about the Federal Reserve back in the 1960s, late 60s, early 70s years, when they were pouring money into the system, not anywhere near the extent they are now, but to pay for the Vietnam War and those kinds of things and make it a little easier. They went off the gold standard. And all of a sudden, you start to see this inflation percolating its way up. And they were sort of in denial. And I was, like I said, I was privy. I was listening on the radio back then, and I remember this stuff. A guy saying, you know, there was evidence of inflation. Well, then we figured it was just an Arab problem. It was just an oil problem. Then it moved to food because there's so much energy consumption in food between the trucks and drying the soybeans and whatever else you got to do. And so finally, one day we said, we can't deny it anymore. There's just inflation, so we got to deal with it. But it seemed like they were in denial, you know, in Egypt, in denial for a while. But it didn't seem like it was, I'm going to say, almost criminal. it's like they like everybody else, because it was the first time it sort of happened, they were sort of in, you know, they didn't realize what was happening to them anyway. I mean, Milton Friedman would say, it's the money supply, you idiots. But by and large, I don't think there was, I didn't detect, we knew it was there absolutely. And the message was more, the more it was right in front of our face, we all of a sudden one day said, yeah, hey, we got it. Which to me is totally different than right now. These guys are in some sort of, I mean, if we go into some kind of an inflationary spiral here to where the market drops by 40% or 50% because these interest rates run up to 7 or 8, these people, I'm not going to be like the Russian Revolution and go after them and shoot people, but these people need to be questioned and say, you knew you were wrong and you said it anyway on our dime. You're our employee, and you're lying on a national TV in front of Congress saying everything's okay. Kevin, it's not okay. This is double what the guys did in the early 70s in terms of money supply movement. And it's benefiting people you and I can name, and any of the listeners can name, and it's detracting from other people. And if and when it goes the other way, it goes south, some people are going to be able to be insulated enough, and the rest of the people are going to be in real bad shape. And if that happens, why do we just let everybody go? Why are the, you know, Powell's been there for two presidents. I mean, we've got two presidents now are telling how great everything is when it really isn't. I mean, is there no, absolutely zero payment for any of these people for doing this? Ever?
Nope. And some of them are really, really good at morphing into the next thing. We've all known these people in corporate world, you know, that somehow manage to, whichever way the political winds are blowing, somehow they manage to be the first one aligned with the new direction. They're total weasels and nobody likes them, and yet they stay alive all the time. And, I've worked with several of those over the course of a rather long career. So we all know them, and you know, look at, I mean, who's the best example now? Well, we got Fauci. He's got a different opinion every month, and man, it seems to be the mainstream opinion, and people still, you know, a large number of people still seem to adore him as he goes through it. He remains St. Fauci to a large percentage of the population. So, you know, you tell me, you got, you know, that's the skill. That's a political skill in corporate world. Well, obviously, it's a political skill in the political world.
Political skills.
You know, that's why they do it, is because the people who get to the high levels are the ones who manage to, you know, just be aligned in the right place at the right time.
What's the quote? I go with the political winds, and right now the political winds come from Vichy, Claude Rains.
Yeah.
S&P futures up 17.
There's a survival skill in politics that is, that works really, really well. And like I said, they're weasels. You know, they're total weasels.
But they're
we
good
know
at
that.
It. If you're going to be a weasel, you want to be a
good weasel. They're damn good at it.
You want to be a good weasel. NASDAQ futures up 54. Yeah, be right back.
Mom put me on her knee when I was little and said, Kevin, you're a weasel. I just want you to be the best weasel you can be.
Talk to you next week. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Low Northbank, Stocks and Jocks, somehow. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kyle Denninger with SP Futures up 17. As if he was up 54, we're a long way from where we were yesterday morning. Down 16, and then we flipped around positive 42, and now another 17. Carl, I got an interesting, we were just talking about weasels with Kevin, right? I remember, talk about something funny. I remember going with the CBOE people when I was chairman of the marketing committee up to they had a whole bunch of people. They had like kind of a money show up in Toronto. And since Toronto is all pretty much interconnected by, you know, bridges and stuff, because it's, you know, freezing there in the wintertime, we actually went and was right. Like 5 below 0, and the place was mopped because you could get in and out all these. But they have something, when you go to these, you know, big shows, a lot of your customers are the other people there in the booths. I mean, if you're selling, a quote system or something, I mean, a potential customer for your quote system is PTI, right? I mean, we have a quote system through IB and so forth, which we like, so we're not in the market for one, but theoretically we could be a customer. So,
right.
But Canada, being the way they are, they're a little more anal about this stuff. They don't want anybody going from booth to booth trying to sell other people in the booth because that's considered bothering you because you're there to talk to the people that are coming in. So they actually have something called a no weasel rule. So when you walk in, the first thing you do is a security guard comes by and he hands you this white sheet of paper and there's a weasel on it. It says no weaseling. And I said to the guy, what is weaseling? We don't want you marketing to other booths. Right? Okay, fine. Well, of course, I'm with the CBOE. We've got the big CBOE banner there and so forth. So one of the guys from, like, the Toronto Stock Exchange or whatever, they were thinking about doing some options. So the guy comes over while everybody's kind of on a break, and he says to me, you know, would it be possible for you to either come speak at one of our meetings or somebody else in the exchange because we want to know, you know, more about options and what they can help out? I said, sure, the guy's talking to me. As soon as he leaves, the security guard shows up. He goes, you know, we've got this no weasel rule here. And I said, okay. He said, was that guy being a weasel? Because if he was, we'll boot him out. I goes, he's a Toronto Stock Exchange. You're going to boot him out? We don't care if he's being a weasel. Out he goes. They were serious.
Oh, wow.
But it was the no weasel rule. But, Manny, when you drive in there, when you get to the airport, I rent a car, and I go, there's a sign. I mean, they're unlike the expressways here, where I don't know what the hell we're doing, but it'll be, it's kilometers per hour, but say speed limit like 60. You know, 70, right. 70 is a $50 ticket, 80 is a $200 ticket, 90, we take your car. I mean, they're not messing around. It's unlike here, you know, you could be going, you know, 130 and it doesn't seem to bother anybody type of thing, even though you're killing people as you go. I mean, it's just a different point of view, but I love that the no weasel rule, and everybody had their own sheet of paper with the weasel on the thing.
That's funny.
That's actually pretty amusing. I mean, we used to do the shows at McCormick because NetWorld Interop was there usually every second year, and then the big show was out in Vegas, but it was either Chicago or Atlanta. So it alternated between those two. So every second year we were down there doing it. And we had folks that could be vendors to us that were in the show.
Yeah.
You know, they made something we maybe wanted to buy. So, yeah, I mean, it was, I always thought it was kind of interesting, though, because we always tried to do something flashy. We'd hand out coffee mugs or something like this, and it was always something that drew a huge crowd and whizzed off everybody else that was in there that was in our line of work, because we always found some way that we thought would upstage them, because that's the way it works at trade shows, right?
Well, you're right. You either have spectacular looking women,
the booth babes,
and the weird part of it is, if you, they're actually, whether it's a booth babe or something. I mean, we went when I was doing stuff for the Seabowl. So you're talking to everybody. You're sort of like a PR guy more than anything else. And I'd see the guy with the nice looking booth babes and so forth. So of course, at those days, I was younger, and I'd be talking to the young ladies, and I said, so what, other than looking good, like, what are you here for? And she said, well, you should know why I'm here. And I'm going, okay, where's this leading? She goes, you see all these people? There's 2,000 people at this show. This group manages money for people that are 2 million and up, okay? And she goes, there's probably 25 people in this show that are our potential clients. So the object is for the guy running the business, like me, I only want him, he only should be talking to those 25 people, not all the rest of the losers, basically. And so it's my job and the girls out here to essentially wean the losers out, so the only people that get through to me or you are the people who have the potential 25 mil, then it's up to you to reel that guy in. It's up to us to make sure nobody with $40 in an account ever gets to talk to you. So if done properly, there's certainly a reason for it, right?
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, it's always, there's always kind of a segregation, because you've got all sorts of people that show up with those things, but no matter what it is that you sell, there's only a certain percentage of the people that are on the floor that are potentially going to buy.
Right.
And it's all great and well. It used to be a goat rodeo every time we did it, because, we were not that huge of a place. So we had, it was overtime for everybody. There was mandatory overtime week, and that was the way it goes. You like it or you don't like it. But if you were really looking at, doing something that was just beyond, buying internet access, you ran an office, you were going to do a whole bunch of various things. Oh yeah, come by the hospitality suite at this after the show's over.
Now, what's the, it's a big, and both of you guys are way closer to this than me. I used to do it for the Seabowl, it was a long time ago, but we obviously haven't had any of those here in Chicago this year, but once in a while my nephew would get me into the machinery show. I don't know if you've ever been to that thing, but it's unreal. I mean, it's every 2 years, and they've got these massive machines, and they're all working, So the setup has got to be, 2-3 weeks easy? And it takes the whole McCormick place. And you go in there, and one I was really astounded by is the guys from Johnson Control. I'm sure you know those guys. And for those of you who you might want to buy your milling machine from North Korea, not North Korea, South Korea, because it's a little cheaper and actually do a nice job. But probably you're going to want Johnson Controls on the thing, right? Because the programming and all the other stuff you're going to want your people to be familiar with. I mean, I'm not an expert on it, but I'm going to say Johnson Controls. How many people do you think they bring all wearing like gold sport coats? Like 50? What do you suppose the budget is for those guys for one of those shows for 2 weeks with the, every guy who's a potential buyer, you're taking him to dinner. I got hotel rooms. What do you suppose the budget is for that?
Well, I don't know about places, like Johnson Controls, but I know that the what we spent on those was prodigious. But the thing is that you don't do it if you don't think the business is there, and if it's not going to be worth it, and of course it's not the gross sales, it's the margin.
Yep.
Because that's all that matters. I mean, you know, you can sell $1 million worth of stuff, but if it costs you $999,000, well, then, yeah. You know, that doesn't go any good. So, but no, I mean, we do one of those down there in McCormick, and I don't think we ever got out of there for less than 50.
Yeah, and you guys weren't.
We weren't that big of a shop, okay? So, I mean, that was a lot of money. But we never had one that when I got done at the end of the day that I said, you know what, we shouldn't have done that. We lost money on it.
But your guys were enough from Chicago that every single guy didn't have a hotel room and feed them all day long either, I would assume.
Oh, right. No, I mean, it was. But every single thing you do, McCormick is a union shop, and every single thing you do is ridiculously expensive. Right. A power strip is, you know, $50 for, you know, per day and things like that. I mean, it's utterly obscene what they do to the people that exhibit there.
Did you ever do anything in the Conrad Hilton downstairs?
No, we usually, when we did hospitality suites and stuff, we usually had them downtown somewhere.
Well, I would always, being the minor electrician that I am, I was always able with the first SIBO to sneak around behind and plug something in where I wasn't supposed to. And we never had to really pay the guy because I ended up being the guy, which I probably shouldn't have, but I did. The Conrad Hilton, they're genius, Carl. All the plugs are 220s.
Yeah.
So if you don't get the adapter from the guy, you can't plug in. Hey, I want to shift gears on you and talk a little about that article that John Flanagan sent us yesterday regarding the Wuhan versus the virus and whether the thing was, you know, made out of bats or doesn't. And it strikes me, because I think you have a level head on this stuff, when you get to a, I'll say, a certain level, or, you know, being a parent, which I'm not, but I think a lot of people are, there, part of the judgment is, you know, what stuff you sort of let go. because if you want to be a strict disciplinarian on your kids, I suppose you could beat them or ground them every day if you're into that ilk. And it's up to you to kind of let stuff go and decide what you really concern yourself about. I mean, in the SIBO, we did this too. The judgment, I don't think, was all that good. But it was always, hey, we heard about some nasty cross that, you know, Goldman did or somebody. That was, you know, totally illegal, and if it was in a court, they'd probably been going to jail. But you'd sit there and you'd say, do we really want this to be the headline tomorrow in Cranes? You know, Goldman Sachs suspended from CBOE for 2 weeks. I mean, is this the right one we want to hang our head on? And regardless of how strict you might be in actually talking to people, like, all right, that wouldn't happen under my watch. Simple fact is, those kinds of judgments happen daily at some level, right? I mean, Lockheed Martin screwed us on this. You know, they overcharged us on this thing by $5 million. Do we just want to adjust the price, or do we really want to spank them, and do we want to suspend them from contracts for 5 years when we got nobody else? I mean, you get to that stage, and there's way more judgment in here than I'm going to say there ought to be, right? I mean, unfortunately.
That's the way it works in the real world. I mean, you know, there were plenty of times that I, you know, when I ran my company, that I could have, you know, bent someone over the table, but from a business perspective, yeah, you could do it, and maybe even get someone thrown in jail. But there's a discretion call, and you make it.
Well, I was reading that article. The article we're talking about, I don't know if Maddie tweeted out, but has to do. It's just a study of the science. Well, science boy, we hate to use that term with this COVID, but essentially, whether or not the COVID was, you know, just happened naturally in a bat and jumped to something else and then to people, or if there was some screw up at that plant. They're not saying intentional or anything, but did it come out of some other type of experiments that got out? And when you read the article, it sounds like maybe, since they had people researching all these bat caves, they came up with 100 different COVIDs, and this one wasn't one of them. I mean, you could get the strong possibility that maybe somebody didn't do it on purpose, but it popped out of this lab. Is that a fair statement, Carl? But I just
I think the evidence is overwhelming that that's what happened.
Okay, I mean, maybe.
Right, and so I mean, I would say that the presumption, and that's just because I understand how to read the sequencing, and you know, it's not really all that hard to find. I mean, it was something I talked about back in March and April of last year, and it was just basically on the data. What they were saying happened. The probability is about equal to me being hit by lightning when I go get my mail this afternoon.
Yeah,
doesn't mean it couldn't have happened that way. It's just that, you know, that's not probably the explanation. It's like anything else with probabilities.
And you're not talking about somebody did it on purpose and let it out. It just is part of a experiments that maybe most people would say shouldn't have been done in the first place because of lack of protection. Something skedaddled out of there. I mean, is that what?
No, I think they were working on a SARS vaccine. That's my working theory, and has been for over a year.
Which means nobody intended.
It wasn't intentional. It got out of the lab, but it wasn't done. But let's face it, the Chinese have a history of being sloppy.
Yeah, the thing that struck me in the article is how rapidly, and I've forgotten all about MERS. I mean, that's why I have you guys remind me of stuff. How rapidly the SARS and the MERS, people were able to track the sequence from the bats. I had no idea that MERS came from camels.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people were very quick to find the sequence, and now they still can't. If it was naturally occurring, it seems like we would know how it happened by now with all the research being done on it, and we don't. I mean, they should have identified. What was the first one? Camel was the MERS. What was SARS? The jump from a bat to what? Was it some kind of weirdo animal we don't have here?
I don't remember what the weird one was that it went through. But that's part of the problem is that when you look at there's unique things in all of all viruses. Okay, I don't care what they are. But when they do that kind of a thing, you can figure out where it came from. And the problem is that the supposed precursor to this one is the changes are illogical to have happened naturally.
That's what that article was pretty much all about.
Basically it's the logical conclusion is that didn't happen because the changes are in places where they make no sense, and not only are the changes in places where they make no sense through natural evolution, but the particular coding that is in the spot that makes it capable of infecting people is a set of coding, a pair of codings together that are favored in humans but no other animal that's allegedly a precursor. And the odds of that happening by random chance in something other than a human being is basically zero.
Okay, so say it's exactly as this article suggests, but now you and I are sitting the two-headed monster in the Oval Office, and somebody makes this claim to us and we all of a sudden believe it. What do we do about it? We're not going to bomb Wuhan. We're not going to. I mean, what do we? I mean, what is even the? It's sort of like the no weasel rule. What are we going to do about it? I mean,
The problem is if you don't stomp on it. I mean, stomping on it would have been tremendously disruptive. But we were already doing that. Remember, we already basically shut the country down. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the problem with not stomping on it, though, is that just look at...
Now, what do you mean by stamping on it? Well, stamping on it meaning getting them to admit it? I mean, they can't pull it back. I mean, we don't think they intended to do it. So what do you mean by...
Chief, you can make them pay for it, number one. And number two, you can fix the offshoring problem that led to the supply chain disruptions we're now taking and are still taking a year later, and we've done nothing to mitigate any of it.
I'm gonna lab this one out there, because I don't know, and I'm trying not to be political here, but I'm gonna say that Trump's gang, Trump and gang, went ahead with a bunch of policies that I don't think they had any real respect for the supply chain. And at the end of the day, I mean, look what they did to the soybean farmers in Minnesota. They didn't seem to care whether those guys only ship their stuff to Seattle and to China, how many of those guys lost their farms versus the guys in Illinois are probably okay? I mean, do you, at that level, do you just not want to know the consequences because you might ruin your decision, or do you do know them and you don't care? Or, I mean, I'm trying to find my way through this, Carl.
I think you have to weigh it all, but the problem you have with politics is to some extent the same problem that you have with public companies. Okay, IBM mostly cares about what the next quarterly report looks like, and so does Facebook, and so does Amazon. Why? Because that's what's going to make their stock price move, right?
Yeah.
What's going to happen 10 years from now is much less concerning to them. They just don't care because they're, this executive probably won't even have that job in 10 years. He's going to retire. He's going to go, look at Bezos is going off and buying his big yacht, and, who knows if he's going to be around. Bill Gates isn't at Microsoft anymore. And so there is a problem with calibrating things for the longer term. And in politics, it's just as bad, if not worse, because what's your timeline? The next 4 years? The next election?
2 years if you're a rep.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. The next election, okay? Which, now... What are people looking at? 2022. Well, that's a year. It's a year away.
Yeah.
And so, are you going to do anything that today is going to get you slammed, but in 5 years is going to make a huge positive difference for the country? And the answer in the political context is almost always no.
Well, I mean, I think that what Trump did, and I'm not bashing. I think to a large extent, a lot of the things that Trump did really ripped the scab off an awful lot of wounds in this country, an awful lot of really stupid thinking on the part of the citizenry in general. I mean, I don't think there's any such thing as a stupid human being, but boy, there can be stupid committees. I mean, right now we have the incredible situation that I think our imports from China are as high as they've ever been. People still can't wait to buy cheaper blue jeans, and yet we strap on our Nikes and our Apple, and we go beat up an Asian person on the street. I mean, what are we doing, Kai? I mean,
well, yeah, and you know what? It's even worse than that because right now there are trucks in particular piling up all over the place because they don't have the chips to put in the engine computers.
Yeah,
and so and by the way, that's not just on new stuff. There are the over the road trucks that bring all your stuff to the store. The newer ones that have all the emission controls on them, God help you if you have a sensor that goes bad in one of those things and you can't get it's a $20 piece, $20 part. No $20 part, truck doesn't start.
Well, Audrey has a you can't be a Southside lady in real estate if you don't have your Cadillac, was it the CRX, the little hatchback? It's like the official car of lady real estate people. By the way, they're nice cars. I mean, they've got all the accoutrements for makeup and a whole bit and your computer. Her cousin who's in the business says there's the equivalent of 30 microcomputers on that thing for the seats.
Right.
Just make sure the seat gets in the right spot when you hit one or two, whichever for God's sake. No wonder people like these old trucks with rolled down windows and stuff from the early 90s. They don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
Well, it's interesting because I have a Mazda and it's a sport model, so it's the so-called base. It's got a manual transmission. We're one of the last cars you can get that has one. And I connect to that with a scan tool and look at it, and it still comes up with like eight or nine modules in there that control all these other things. And yeah, if one of those goes out, well, if it's the wrong one, you push the button, nothing happens.
Well, yeah, it's impossible. I mean, you're going to attempt to. I can remember my old Jeep where I put in like a water pump and those kinds of things. I mean, I'm not touching them now. I mean, there's no way. I mean,
I've got the software and interfaces to be able to actually work on them. I mean, there's one particular thing on that specific model of car that on most cars it just runs terribly if it goes bad, and that's this thing called a mass airflow sensor. It tells the computer how much air is coming into the engine. Well, on these cars, if it goes bad, it won't start.
Really? Okay.
And so and by the way, at the dealer, if they have it, it's a couple $100 piece. You can get them for aftermarket that are $20-$25. Well, guess what? There's one in the spare tire well in my vehicle because if that goes bad, you push the button, nothing happens. And it's one of those things that you know where that's made. That's probably, I mean, the original is probably made in Japan, but I'm willing to bet all the replacements come out of China.
Well, is if you were to list all the stuff that is causing, and obviously we're with a, you know, with an eye being Stacks and Jacks, if we could come up with a few companies that will be the first on the scene and be able to sell this stuff to Ford and other people at pretty good prices, we probably want to invest in those places. But I'm not going to recommend anybody invest in a Chinese company. I mean, I'm having trouble even finding a place to do this car. But it's, I mean, do we have any, I guess we stepped down this road. I mean, it's like, I almost get the feeling, again, I keep using the guy's name, and it's not him personally, but it's sort of like not understanding or caring how intricate a human body is and just stabbing somebody in the abdomen. Hey, do you realize what you just did? You just wrecked like 15 organs and blood. I mean, if you don't have a concept of what the complexity of it is, and you go like a bull in a china shop, like I think they did a little bit, I mean, did we cause this? Did the concentration in the industry before Trump, it's been going on for 20 years, did it cause that? Did offshoring cause it? Or is the answer to all the above? I mean, man, I guess that's what
Chief, it's all the above. We have incessantly thought, how do I do this for $5 less? There are basically, I mean, when it comes to fabs, which actually make these chips, okay, that actually make the wafers, TSMC is one of the big ones. It's in Taiwan. Okay, some of the others are in China proper. The capacitors that smooth out the energy flow in electronics, a huge number of those come out of Chinese factories. Most of them are garbage. There's, what a lot of people don't understand is there's a half dozen different manufacturers, different grades. Well, you know what? It's just like the restaurant. You know, you think that there's three grades of steak, right? Well, there's not. Okay, if you actually buy from a restaurant supply, you know, place, Sysco, the restaurant supply people, there's not three grades, there's a whole bunch.
Yeah, it's probably like
And if you want something that's, you know, 20 cents a pound cheaper, yep, you can have that. And so ratchet down on the quality until people start to notice, and, you know, that's part of the art of doing things like this. But the same thing goes on in electronics, the same thing goes on in industry, the same thing goes on everywhere, and we've been relentlessly doing this. For the last couple of decades, we've paid zero attention to critical supply chain and how all of this interconnects. And sooner or later, we already have seen, in some cases, we've seen things break that you'd think, oh, that's not really all that big a deal. I mean, look at what happened with Colonial Pipeline.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, this is, it's just a pipe, you know, it's half the supply. Wait a minute, how did you end up with concentration? Half the supply is running through something to be hacked from the outside.
Well, let's talk about this after break. SVP's up 15, NASDAQ's up 49, and it's beautiful Friday afternoon in Chicago. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life,
Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. The board S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 46. Been up all morning. We're up, we're down yesterday. Right at the end of the show, we made it back to like even in the futures. And we were up pretty seriously all day, and now we're up again this morning. So, like I said, we're pretty much right at the exact same spot we were last Friday after all this carnage up and down. Dow futures up 143. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 66.4%. FTSE up 49 cents. I'm going to call that one flat. CAC round up 42.7%. So up a little bit over there, but not huge. Nikkei up 219. These guys have been up or down 200 points like every day this week. 0.8%. Shanghai down 20.6%. They've been doing the opposite every day this week, it seems. Hang Seng up 8 points. Call that one flat. Taiwan is up 1.6% after being down 2 and 3%. A couple of times. It's kind of crazy. I mean, like I said, it's been crazy. Bonds unchanged at 1.61. We've got the as soon as I get my stuff back up here. We've got the Bund minus two basis points and down to -0.13 after breaking into the single digits the other day. Japan, same as it's been for a long time now, +0.09%. Oil with a up move this morning almost 2%, up $1.15 to $63.09. Brent up a buck, 1.5%. Natural gas unchanged. RBOB up 2 cents to 206. And we've got gold. It's now up 340, 1885. Silver down 9 cents, 2797. Copper down 2 cents, 454. And our crypto is up 768. This is Bitcoin at 40,940 after trading at 30,000 the other day, and bouncing right back off that number. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the Bishop Ford. It's on the inbound side at 137th. This crash has been moved to the right shoulder, but it's causing significant congestion if you're coming in on I-94 from the south side, so keep that in mind as crews work to get that crash cleared. About an hour ago, we had a rollover crash on I-57. Apparently, that's all clear now. Rollover crash that ejected a person from the vehicle, and yet somehow the person had non-life-threatening injuries and basically walked away from it.
He was a good bouncer.
Good Lord. A rollover crash at 7 in the morning on I-57. That's what you want. Still working on that issue across the border on the Indiana side. We had a significant crash earlier this morning on 8094 westbound at Indianapolis Boulevard. The cleanup has the three left lanes blocked right now, so it's a significant crash causing solid traffic. Expect delays over 2 hours if you're heading on westbound 8094 right near the Illinois-Indiana border there, so you want to avoid that if you can, because that's been a significant issue.
Is it possible to have a minor crash on that roadway, 4 or 5 lanes of people going 90 miles an hour?
With, like, no shoulder on either side. Yeah, it's not good.
No issues if you're coming in on the Ryan. Stevenson and Eisenhower, traffic building steadily, but no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looking good. Off the expressways, one other crash in Bensonville. Addison Street at Green Street, there's an accident, but everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, a beautiful summer-like day today on a Friday. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 83. Right now it's mostly clear and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast and a high of 85. Right now it's cloudy and 79. In sports, Cubs took 3 of 4 from the Nats this week, winning yesterday 5-2. Ian Happ was the big star, hitting 2 home runs. Jason Hayward did not play because he was put on the injured list before the game with a hamstring strain, so he'll be out for at least 10 days there. Cubs travel to St. Louis tonight to take on the Cardinals in a big battle of first place versus second place in the NL Central. Speaking of first place, the White Sox are still in first place. They were off yesterday. They're back in action tonight as they're headed to the Bronx to take on the Yankees. That's a 6:05 Chicago time first pitch. Yankees are playing well as well. They've won 3 in a row, so that should be a fun weekend series on both sides of town. Cubs, Cardinals, and White Sox, Yankees. Lastly, the Diamondbacks lost to the Dodgers 3-2, and PGA Championship Golf is underway. Round 1 completed yesterday. Corey Connors, -5, has a 2-shot lead over Brooks Koepka and Keegan Bradley. Phil Mickelson's hanging right in there, just 3 shots back, with Round 2 teeing off today. Chief.
Carl, you stay on this subject a little bit of the supply chain, because it really is affecting a lot of people. And if you, obviously affecting some stocks, it's affecting a lot of things. But I get the feeling that, unfortunately, an awful lot of our manufacturing and the decisions people are making, you know, the buy versus build, those kinds of things, the decisions we used to make at Pullman all the time, are so tied up in government now that it is amazingly unhealthy. I'm going to say plus and minus. I think it was a reasonable thing for Trump to do, to call out China and all this stuff. But I don't know if he ever had the background or the backing of anybody. I'm not saying bad on him. It just, you know, because nowhere during that 4-year period, if you'd have dropped all the gold and the leprechauns, you know, at the end of the rainbow, I would never have thought ever to have invested in a business that was going to benefit by stuff coming back here from China. I always thought it was a short-term thing, that he was probably a one-term guy, and even his party didn't really support him because they're behind stuff by some Chinese firm somewhere. I never thought it was going to work its way through, and you know, unfortunately, I was right. I mean, if you'd have put up a blue jean plant thinking there weren't going to be any blue jeans coming from China, I think you're sitting there playing bocce ball in your blue jean plant. I never did it cross my mind that was going to stick, because all people want to do is get stuff cheap because they're not doing very well. A lot of people in the society are not doing very well, and all they want to do is buy the cheapest thing. I mean, did it ever strike you that this was going to stick to the point where you want to be the first with a factory?
No, and that's the problem. It's the issue when you get down to it is that as long as the capacity within the United States economy exists for people to do what they've done over the last 20, 30 years. I mean, look, this goes all the way back to Perot talking about the giant sucking sound down in New Mexico, right?
Yeah.
As long as that capacity exists, then if somebody's going to do it, because why would you not? I mean, from your point of view as a consumer, would you pay $5 for something you can get for $4? Well, of course not, if you perceive them to be of equal quality and everything else, right? And these days, we have lost there is no marketing on quality and how it makes your life easier. It's all about we figured out the Freudian thing, so you know, we know what everyone appeals to, right? With their marketing and their, you know, their sales messages. And the fact that you have essentially a literal slave over there in China making your shoes or phones or whatever, it doesn't bother anybody.
No.
And nobody will go after it. The problem is you have to go after it systemically. It needs to be a policy, a formal policy of the government that says you're not doing this, and we're going to structure the tax system, we're going to structure the import-export, you know, the tariff system and things like this in such a way that it's just simply not economic. for people to do it anymore. And if you do that, then everybody says, okay, that's not the way we're going to go. We're going to do it the other way. But as long as you have the ability for somebody to play this game, it's going to happen because, you know, let's face it, running businesses, the first businesses make money.
Well, and I mean, me being my background in the accounting world is not so much of a financial guy. I leave that to my bro. But I was pretty good at cost accounting. And, which is, boy, is that a lost art now, Carl, or what? I mean,
Well, I think a lot of people don't care.
Probably. But it always struck me as when you're talking about stuff. Matter of fact, I went to when I was trying to see some stadiums, of course, I end up talking to people. That's what I do, right? And I'm in the Detroit Stadium. I'm sitting next to this lady who has two sons taller than me. They're about like 6'5", 6'6", twins, real nice kids. And I'm talking to her, and her husband had died recently. And she worked for a plant in Jackson, Michigan, that made injectors. And I don't know the history of when it stopped becoming Delco and Ford to where these things became Delphi, and then they're still automotive people, but they supplied a lot of the big three, not just one. Anyway, this was a Delphi injector plant. And so she said the plant, they made the best injectors in the world. I mean, they were bought by Jaguar, you name it. And that all of a sudden the plant foreman or whoever the plant manager got a hair up his behind, that we could go for 3 hours less per widget or whatever per hour for people if we moved to upstate New York, because they just lost was it Electromotive and somebody else, and everybody's you know out of work in Syracuse and those kinds of places, which became a real Rust Belt kind of area. So they basically packed up the plant and moved because the union wouldn't come up with 4 hours. And I'm going to say, from what she was telling me, at the end of the day, Carl, I'm going to bet you that if you and I sat down and had a week to do it, I'll bet you it was ended up not being worthwhile. She said the moving costs, the amount of that they packaged 1.5 million individual parts and drill bits. And she said when they got up there, it took months. The area, yeah, had a bunch of people not working. It took months to get the plant running where people could pass the drug tests. Because so many people were out of work.
Right.
All they did was stay at home and do drugs. And but, you know, the interesting part is she kind of let it slip. I finally said, you know, what happened to your husband? And she said, well, he died from this very rare brain cancer. And she said about 5 or 6 other guys in the plant had the same issue. So immediately dawns on my conspiratorial mind, I wonder if that's the real reason they moved that plant. Was the...
Well, you know, you never really know. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, there's all sorts of stuff that goes on in the back, you know, in the back room that you don't see. And one of the things that has become embedded in American industry is this, you know, this stretch the supply chain, just-in-time inventory and things like this. And it all sounds good as long as everything's working. But then you have, you know, you have a nation, especially a nation that has essentially a command economy and a command government that can cover essentially anything up. And if you say something they don't like, they literally take you out back and shoot you and shove you in a hole. And there's a little problem with that because, you know, they're doing their own thing. They've got a military. They've got their own aspirations, just like we have ours. And somebody commits an oops, and in the U.S., you commit those kinds of oops, and a good percentage of the time, you get caught, okay? And maybe you don't go to jail, but at least it, you know, it gets out there in the public. I mean, you know, look at what happened with Ford with the Pinto, right?
Yeah.
And you know, was that entirely deserved? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, our family had one. My sister got rear-ended when she was in it. She's lucky that it didn't catch on fire because it sure did put a hole in the gas tank.
Well, one of my buddies from Pullman actually saw the car that was the subject of the big lawsuit and everything. And he said, I don't care where that tank was, you could hit it on the front bumper and that thing would have exploded.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the thing, was I went and got her stuff out of the vehicle in the wrecker yard after she had the accident, right? And it wasn't her fault, she got rear-ended. But the fact of the matter is there was gas all over the ground because there was a big hole in the gas tank.
Wow.
But the car was so small, you hit it pretty much anywhere, and that kind of thing could happen.
Well, obviously this week there's a lot of stuff I've met, let the listeners know things that I messed up on. Car. I had no idea that the Tesla was selling those tax credits for that kind of money. I knew they were getting them, and I knew it was part of their profit. I had no idea they were selling them for $500 million a quarter. I feel like an idiot for not knowing that. One thing I will say to our politicians and whoever and the listeners is that the decisions of people to invest in this country, the beauty of a free enterprise system, which I don't think we really have anymore, to a large extent, and that's, I think, the root cause of everything that you and I talk about. I mean, the idea is for you or one of the listeners or Matty Weber, he's young, he's got energy, to sit there and go, hey, you know, this bar, this restaurant, this factory, this auto dealer, this business, if somebody could provide this to them, it would be worth something to them. And guess what? I can provide the service for here, and I think it's worth X to these guys. And the difference, I can live on, I can make myself a salary, I can have employees, I can retire on. That's the decision that makes us different than virtually anybody who's ever been in this world, right? And that's what made the U.S. economy what it is. But if you start sitting there going, man, I'd sure like to provide this service, but boy, if I buy that building over there, Lori Lightfoot's going to triple my taxes next year, and all of a sudden, or she might say, I have to hire God knows who that don't know what they're doing. Or whatever it is, I'm not trying to make political statements, or my taxes are going to go up, my income tax, or all of a sudden we're going to open up the floodgates and the stuff the Chinese can't sell here, and all of a sudden they can again. You start adding all that line of crap to the decision process that's very difficult to start with. I think you screw everything up, Carl, and I think we've done that.
Well, you do, but see, that's the thing is, though, is that what you have to look at is, anything you incentivize, you get more of. Okay? And anything you punish, you get less of. That's just basic logic.
But it's always been astounding to me that we can grow cotton here, ship the cotton to China, have guys make blue jeans, ship it back, and somehow it's still cheaper than if we just had a decent, efficient plant here and paid people, I'm not saying $50 an hour, but something. I can't believe that dynamic is that different. I mean, that all of a sudden it's that much different in the blue jeans. I mean,
Chief, the problem is here's the thing. All right, the blue jeans, in order to become blue jeans, a cotton has to be made in a fabric and then it has to be dyed, right?
Yep.
Okay, what do you do with the dye after you're done with it?
Okay, so you're adding the well, that's what I'm saying. It's another factor. Well, wait a minute. I can't get rid of the bad dye, but in China they don't care, right?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, one of the things that I pointed out when I wrote my book back in 2011 is that wage and environmental parity arbitrage is essentially why all of this happened. All right, in semiconductors it's even worse because the processing for those, I mean, lithium batteries, solar cells, all stuff. The chemical processes, you know, we used to have love canal. Well, we got tired of that and we cleaned it up. We said, we're not going to do that anymore. When I was growing up, you went past this chemical plant, your eyes would water. I don't know what they were dumping into the air, but it was bad. And now you go by the same place, they still make chemicals, and you don't smell anything.
Well,
we stopped it. Well, they didn't. Well, guess where all the really nasty, ugly stuff went? Over there.
Well, yeah, and they don't. Well, I mean, anecdotally, and this is, I don't know how many other people families can think back of their family history. I'm going to say that the group that showed up here on the boat from Italy, not one of them, most of them made it to their late 80s, 90s. I don't think there was a cancer death anywhere, and I'm going to say that there probably were 5 or 6 or 7 cancer deaths among their kids before the age of 50. And you can't tell me that there's some correlation there with the stuff that people were putting in the air in the 40s and 50s.
Well, sure, but see, here's the thing that goes along with that. Okay, over there you have that. Okay, and then the second thing is that the wage floor on labor is always zero, and if you can manage to find some way to essentially enslave people and get them to have to do the work, well, okay, so you take those two things and you put it together and tell me how you solve the problem. Well, the way you solve the problem is you have policies at a federal level that cannot be evaded. I don't care where you put your plant, I don't care where your company's domicile, makes no difference. You want to sell something in the United States, you're going to follow those rules, period. And that's the end of the conversation.
Well, yeah, and nobody wants that. We have a few minutes left here, and maybe Manny can opine on this. This idea of these states, I mean, I think we've all talked about, and everybody, you always get focused on, the guy drinking beer and his wife beater T-shirt sitting on the sofa getting a check from the government, right? So the idea the states are refusing this, this some of the money from the federal government because they don't want to.
Right.
I get where they're coming from a little bit, but I don't. But you can tell whose ox is being gored here. I mean, a lot of these companies are whining to these politicians saying, "It is my right to have somebody come in here and slug away making pizzas at $10 an hour." No, it's not. I mean, if the going rate goes to, does anybody really think? I don't know where this comes down, and I really don't know. I don't know how many people are actually sitting there because they're making a little bit more at home. But I will say this, Kyle, I don't think it's up to government to sort of take sides. We have to find a way now. I mean, does anybody really think that in Chicago and New York, and Manny knows this because his brother's a big-time chef, does anybody really think that some guy or lady making $10 an hour in the hospitality business has been sitting around since last March waiting for that phone call to come back at $10 an hour? If you haven't moved to Florida or Texas or someplace, you're out of your friggin' mind, unless your parents are paying for you to live down in the basement. Now, why would you ever have stayed here hoping for that phone call to happen? I mean, all of a sudden...
Well, you wouldn't, and that's the... But then here's the other thing, too. It's not just the cash, all right? I mean, it's... The help wanted signs around here, they're everywhere. It's employers are doing things like take the stab or wear a mask.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? When you were hired, was that part of your negotiation with your job that you had to turn over your personal health information to the employer? Of course it wasn't.
Not for $10
an hour.
So now
they want to unilaterally change the terms?
Well, and I think...
Well, here's the thing that gets me. Walmart is doing this kind of thing, right? They've got a memo that's out that you can actually see. And yet... The local Walmart here, if every one of those employees turned around and walked out and said, "Bite me," walked right out the door, they wouldn't even dent the help wanted signs within a 5-mile radius of that place. Okay? That's how tight the labor market is right now.
Well, it's tight. I think a lot of people have left some of these places. But I also think, what did Milton Friedman say? There's no such thing as a shortage, it's too low of a price.
Right.
I mean, I think
price is not just money, it's also terms. If you're
right.
Treating your staff like crap, what do you expect?
Right. I wonder, CNBC, who you and I go hot and cold on, because I read some horrible articles there, then all of a sudden I'll get somebody who must be new that actually looks like they do a lot of research and comes up with facts I would have loved to. But they had a bunch of people, somebody in Iowa, Maddie's home state, and the lady was making $72,000, a place went under. So she says there hasn't been a day she hasn't looked for a job. And she goes, the governor is demanding that I go take one of these jobs for $10 an hour with a master's degree. Is that what he's saying? That I can't, in my business, looking for a new job is a 2 or 3 month project. It's not, so I'm supposed to, he's going to cut off my benefits if I don't start making pizzas tonight?
Right. I mean, well, I see the abuse side of it, though, on the other side, too, because, I'm in the grocery store the other night, and none of the check lines are open, and only half of the self-checkout registers, and one of the other customers goes up to, there's a line waiting to get out of the store. One of the customers goes up to the chick that's monitoring everybody that's checking out their own stuff, says, how come the other, there's nothing wrong with them, they're just turned off, they're marked closed.
Yeah.
And she says, nobody came to work.
Yeah.
We got nobody in the store. We got nobody to actually run the stuff. And I'm saying, there's a help wanted sign the door. Well, guess what? We got rid of our mandates over here, but all these people, I got that rag on your face. Well, at some point, people say, I'm tired of being yelled at and abused, and I'm just not going to show up. And, oh, by the way, if I don't show up today, you can't fire me because you can't run the place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just, somehow or another, it's that, I mean, there seems like unrealistic expectations on both sides.
There are on both sides, and that's the problem, is that you've driven up the wage floor with the unemployment stuff and the checks and the stimulus and the handouts. And then at the same time, you've ratcheted down the stupidity level from the, you know, from the top of the corporation down to the staff members. And then you're wondering why you're having a problem getting labor that shows up and actually works.
When you call somebody and say, come back to work, I've never seen anything like this, Carl. In the last year, the price of used cars is up like 18%. It's up 10% in April. I've never seen that in all the years I've been watching these numbers, which is a long time. I mean, so the guy's price of the car to go to work just went from eight grand to 8,800. So that's his first 80 hours of work, just the increase in a month. I mean, it's, yeah. Carl, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 1375. SP Futures up 36. Looks like another up day. Back next week, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.